Al will be forever the myth.
You're the king of kings, Al.
There's always a pecking order. The little peckers never mess with the big pecker. So I'm a rooster, and he's a chicken.
This episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast is brought to you by our sponsor, Florida Alternative Medicine. All right, welcome everybody to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, where we talk to the legends of bodybuilding and we also talk about the history of bodybuilding. I'm your host, John Hansen. On today's show, we are going to have one of the premier female bodybuilders from the 1980s. We've been trying to interview some of the women bodybuilders from the golden era of bodybuilding in the 1980s, and it's been kind of slow getting off the ground. I talked to Ruth Silverman, who used to be a writer for Muscle and Fitness and, of course, for Iron Man magazine. That was our first interview. And then last year, we got a chance to interview Corey Everson, six-time Miss Olympia, one of the icons of the sport. And today, we're going to interview Janet Tech. So Janet Tech won the MPC Nationals. She won her class in the MPC Nationals in 1988, and she went on to compete in several pro shows, including the Miss Olympia. So we got a chance to talk to Janet today about her experiences competing in women's bodybuilding back in the 1980s. So I think you guys are really going to like this. Janet's got a great personality. And one of our friends on the show, of course, Jerry Branham, has talked about Janet before. So now we've got a chance to talk to Janet herself. Before we get to that, I want to mention our sponsor, who is Florida Alternative Medicine, where age is just a number. If you want to feel great, optimize your energy levels, burn fat, and balance your hormone levels to maximize your potential, then go see the experts at Florida Alternative Medicine and Weight Loss. They have a certified and knowledgeable staff that will work with you to achieve your goals and get you the results you've been looking for. They offer a wide range of services that ensure you will not only look and feel amazing, but also be comfortable knowing that they're there for you every step of the way. Their competitive pricing, along with their quality products and services, are just a few reasons to give them a call. So call them at their office number in Tampa, Florida, 813-922-8939, or you can just go to their website, which is flalternativemeds.com. Again, that's flalternativemeds.com. They have offices all over the United States, but they can work with anybody in the continental United States just through their website. Tell them that you heard their ad on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, and they'll give you a free consultation, plus they'll give you 20% off your first order. All right. And when we finish our interview with Janet, I've got another magazine to read. This one comes from the February 1989 issue of Flex Magazine. And this was the issue that covered the 1988 MPC Nationals for the women. And this was the one where Janet Tech won the lightweight class. So I'm going to read that article, which will tie in perfectly with our interview. And since that's kind of a short article, I thought I would also read another article from this magazine. And we had Tony Pearson on last week, along with Tom Terwilliger and Phil Williams. And Tony's got an article in here called Beyond Raw Muscle. And it's all about symmetry and how to develop symmetry. So I thought that'd be a great tie-in with last week's interview with Tony. So I'm going to read that one as well. So stay tuned after our interview with Janet Tech, and you'll be able to hear that interview. All right, what else is going on? Nothing really happened in the world of bodybuilding last week. I got some really bad news. I don't know how many of you guys liked the show The Wire, which was on HBO probably about 20 years ago now. I think it was in the early 2000s. It is absolutely my favorite TV show ever. If you haven't seen it, I'm sure you could check it out on HBO. I think it lasted 5 seasons, and it was about the drug scene in Baltimore during the early 2000s, and it talked about the police and the politicians and everything. And it was one of the most realistic and moving shows I've ever seen. And to this day, I think it was, in my opinion, the best TV show that's ever been on television. I think it's better than The Sopranos or anything else. So check that out if you haven't seen it. Anyways, one of the main characters in the show was a guy named Omar. And Omar Williams was a guy who went out and who lived on the streets, and he robbed drug dealers. And he was really an interesting character, and he was played by Michael K. Williams. Well, I just found out today that Michael K. Williams passed away, and I think it was from a heroin overdose. I had no idea he had a drug problem, but man, what a shame. What a great, great actor. And you probably see him on Boardwalk Empire, and he was on that mini series, The Night Of, just a great actor. He's been in a lot of movies, real authentic actor, great actor. And man, he's way too young to go. So what a shame. Big loss in the world of acting. So rest in peace, Michael K. Williams. I did not get any emails from you guys last week, but I did put part one of our interview with Tony and Tom and Phil up on YouTube. I haven't put anything up on YouTube in over a month, so I finally got an interview up there. And I got some comments on that video, so I'll read those real quick. Dale C. said, Tony's book is moving, to say the least. I now admire Tony for more than his physique. Sal said, great stories and awesome memories. Thanks for sharing all the great words of wisdom. It's True said, shout out from Singapore. I love the stories from all the guys. Samuel said, great job, John. Philip said, thank you all. Great stuff. The Sprit said, awesome. I can hardly wait for part two. Bill said, John, this has to be the best show you've done. The three bodybuilding guests were interesting. They had great stories. I preceded them and you. What was conspicuously absent was steroids. I quit bodybuilding in 1977. I had won the Pacific Coast, and I went to Vancouver, British Columbia, to enter the Mr. North America contest. I have to thank the late Mike Mentzer, who won that contest, for being candid about what steroids and injections I was going to have to do to compete at that level. I hung up my posing trunks, and I didn't look back. Wow. Yeah, Mentzer looked fantastic at that contest. That was one of my favorite Mike Mentzer physiques from 1977 when he won that North America show. Great email. Thanks, Bill. Bill also said, Tony Pearson is amazing. Barbara said, I remember when Tony trained at Venice Beach. He was cut to ribbons. We worked on a TV show, The Man from Atlantis. Go to Carlo the Movie. Tony, you are one of the few bodybuilding champions who's aged well. James Ferrucci. This one says, we want more of these three, and we want it now. Pablo says, Tom, Tony, and Phil possess some of the finest aesthetics in bodybuilding. Mad respect. Tom spoke of his mentor, Tony Pandolfo, who owned a hardcore gym in Long Island, New York, way before Bev's Mecca. Tony had the biggest calves and was featured in a couple of vintage magazines like Dan Laurie's Muscle Illustrated, Muscle Digest, and others. I was fortunate to have competed against Pandolfo in my third competition in 1985. Jose Guzman smoked everyone in the middleweight class, overall, and couples competition. Tony placed second and I placed fourth. Awesome interview. Wow, I remember Jose Guzman. He was a great bodybuilder. All right. I didn't get any comments on our Apple Podcast page either. So anyways, if you guys want to leave any comments on this show with Janet Tech, you can email me at naturalolympia@gmail.com, or you can comment on our YouTube page, which is under my name, John Hanson. All right. I think that's all I got for our opening, guys. Not much to talk about this week. Of course, we got the Olympia coming up in about four more weeks, and Sean Ray said I will be working it this year again, doing backstage interviews, so I'm really excited about that. So we'll have more to talk about that as it comes closer. The Arnold Classic is only about 2 weeks away, 2.5 weeks away, so that's coming up pretty soon as well, and then the Olympia will be 2 weeks after that. I want to wish a belated happy birthday to my dad, who turned 84 on August 29th. So happy birthday, Dad. I forgot to mention that last week. All right. I think that's all I got, guys. So here's our interview with Janet Tech. When we get done, as I said, I'll be reading some articles from the February 1989 issue of Flex Magazine. Here we go. All right. Welcome back to the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. And I have a very special guest with me this week, Miss Janet Tech, who was the 1988 MPC Nationals winner and was a female bodybuilder during the 1980s, 1990s period. So I wanted to talk to Janet about what bodybuilding was like in the early days. Hey, Janet, thanks for joining me.
Hey there, John. So great to see you, and thanks for having me.
It's my pleasure.
Boy, in the 80s was a whole different world. 80, yeah. 80, I'd say 81, I was training in a swim club in Philadelphia, where I lived at the time. And I had just graduated college.
Okay.
And thought, I'm going to see what this weight room is all about here. Nobody was in there.
Really? Okay.
Chart on the wall. And I thought, okay, I'll just do all of these. And I went down the list and played. And I was like, wow. You know, I had studied dance and had a pretty developed lower body, but I had spindly arms, which was my, you know, that was always my weak point through all bodybuilding because it always lagged.
Yeah.
But I saw little muscles starting to pop up, and I thought, oh, I like this. So I joined a real gym eventually when I moved to Jersey and met an NPC judge there.
Oh, okay.
Who mentored me.
Oh, okay.
And that was okay. 83 when I went in my first show.
So did you hear about women's bodybuilding? Because it started like Miss Olympia started in 1980, and it seemed like it really caught the attention of the mass media everywhere, you know, because it was so crazy that women were developing muscles.
Yeah, I thought that was when I saw, well, of course, Rachel McClish.
Yeah.
And Lisa Lyons.
Yeah, the first one.
You know, Lydia Chen, those people, I thought, whoa, I want to do that because they all had really nice upper bodies, and that was a thing for me.
Okay.
Although Rachel's upper body was a little more like mine.
Okay.
It was more a little more willowy in the upper.
Yeah.
But my first show I actually saw was in 1981 in Philadelphia at the Sheraton, and that was the Miss Olympia.
Oh, wow. No kidding. You saw that one, huh?
Yeah, I was there. And I believe, if my memory is correct, that you sat and had dinner. I think it was like a dinner thing.
I think you're right. Yeah, I remember that.
And then the show. I had no idea. That's not the usual, but I was like, this is pretty cool.
What brought you out there? What made you decide to go see that?
Well, I was, you know, just finishing up art school. I was an art major in college. I just graduated. And I just found it interesting that people could change their bodies by doing that. And I saw that as kind of like human sculpture.
Yeah.
And I wanted to see, and of course I was looking at the magazines, and of course you compare yourself to the magazines and you're like, well, I think I could do this, but do I want to do that? Why not? Give it a shot. You know, it wasn't a burning desire. It was just, hey, that looks like fun. Let me try that.
Right.
I had dance background, so I think the posing part wasn't that difficult. So I just went to the show to see it. Okay. And I remember Kiki Iloma.
Yeah.
She won. And and she looked great. So it just kind of set a fire under me, and I wanted to try it, you know?
Hmm. So she beat Rachel that year, right?
She beat Rachel that year.
Yeah.
So I guess Rachel won the year before.
Right, the first one.
And maybe the year after. But when I started competing, Rachel stopped. So I never met Rachel.
Okay.
I never met her. So that was the bummer of it all.
Yeah. So you said you started off in this weight room at your college?
It was a swim club.
Oh, there was a
swim club in Philly that I would go to. And they had this little room that nobody ever used with just a universal in there and a couple of dumbbells.
Yeah.
And I just started playing on there.
Okay.
And it was great. Nobody was ever there. So every time, you know, I just went every week.
Place yourself, yeah.
It was all me and, you know, whoever I brought with me.
So when did you join that real gym? You said you joined a gym in Jersey.
That was probably around 82.
Okay.
83, I did my first show when I was at that gym. And that was a no air conditioning, big garage doors opening.
Right.
I'd say, I think it was Clementon, New Jersey, or Stratford, New Jersey.
Okay.
On a highway. And it was, you know, big old dog lived in there. It was a real man's bodybuilding gym. And here comes, they used to call me Little Bo Peep. I'd walk in there and, I paid my dues. I deserve to use this bench too. And they just my bench. I had to get feisty to hold my ground in there.
I'll bet.
You were the only girl? I was the only girl. That was 1983.
Yeah.
And then in comes the judge, Jim Banaszewski.
Okay.
He was a NPC judge. And he said, hey, you know, he was a really likable, nice guy. And he would say, yeah, you should do this way. I literally had no idea what I was doing. I bought a book by Bill Pearl.
Oh,
it's called Keys to the Inner Universe.
The big one, the big book.
I have it because later on at the end of my career, we did a promo together for a Herman's Sporting Goods.
Okay.
And I brought that book with me and he signed that book for me. He was a great guy.
Oh, he's a great guy. Yeah.
So I was so excited to meet him. So anyway, that was my bodybuilding Bible because there were no trainers.
No, no training, no personal training back then.
None of that.
Right.
No trainers, no cell phones, no texting, no Google. How do I do this? You know, it was a really different world.
It was totally different. Yeah.
You get to say that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I went by that book and a little feedback from different people in the gym that I took or left, you know, depending on what I thought.
Yeah.
And I started to see, you know, games. And then Jim Benazeski, the judge, was judging a show in Philadelphia. He says, you should get in there and get your feet wet. Give it a try. Okay. I'm like, okay. So my diet consisted of, instead of eating a whole sandwich, I ate half a sandwich.
Just cut everything in half.
I just cut everything in half. That's how much I knew.
Right.
And it worked because I decreased my calories.
Yeah.
And I taught aerobic classes. I had no clue. Anyway, I went in the show and I won.
You won.
So I thought, can't be this easy.
It's going to get harder.
It's going to get a lot harder. So, you know, a win is great in the beginning because it's easier to do another and another and another.
Right.
Whether it's harder or not, once you get your feet in there and invest some time, now's when the real work begins.
Okay.
And you get better advice and you are a little smarter about your diet. And of course, you learn and you learn and you learn and you read.
Yeah. So after that first show, did you say, okay, this is what I want to do now. I want to, you know, go to the Olympia or, yeah.
I didn't go that far. I just, you know, I'm someone that kind of rolls with life.
Yeah.
You know, if it works out well, we'll continue. If it doesn't, maybe I'll start to back off. And I thought, I'll roll with this for a little while.
Okay.
It ended up being about 10 years.
Wow. So what was your next show?
The next show was probably, I think that qualified me to get into the New Jersey State Championships, which I won.
Wow. Okay.
Then that qualified me for the USA.
What was the competition like back then, Janet? Was there a lot of girls in it?
Oh my gosh. In fact, I left one show out. No, there was a Big Apple Classic in New York, and that was probably one of the biggest shows I've ever been in. And that was really early on.
Okay.
There were 52 women in each class.
Yeah, wow. In each class?
Each class.
Holy cow.
It was tremendous. Jeez. And I just looked around and I thought, yeah, I want to be here because if you float to the top 10, you're doing good, you know.
Yeah,
was so excited. So I like the bigger classes because there's more competition. You're only as good as competition.
How many classes did they have? Three?
They had three. Holy. That was MPC, so it was light. I was always a light, medium, and heavy.
Wow.
Yeah. And there
were 150 girls.
Unbelievable. It was really great.
And then how did they look?
After the drugs creeped into the sport, you could see those numbers dwindling because people didn't want to do it. Had I seen some of those girls that were on the drugs competing, I would have definitely not done it.
Yeah. Yeah.
To me, it's all about the merging of all the muscles together and the symmetry of it. And if you can get larger and keep that symmetry, awesome.
Yeah.
If not, I don't see the point.
Yeah. Yeah. We talk about that on this podcast a lot. I had Corey on. I interviewed Corey.
Oh, yeah.
And we talk about how big women's bodybuilding was back then. And it was like, there was so many women fascinated with that, you know, with just developing a beautiful physique. And this was way before the drugs got into it.
Right.
But it was unbelievable how popular it was. And then also how popular it was with the media once they discovered it, because it was a new concept of women flexing and having muscles. And they covered it. It was on like CBS Sports, Fly World of Sports, all the newspapers, all the media outlets. It was unbelievable.
They were women with muscle that were also feminine.
Right, right, right.
So, you know, I thought as Rachel was out of the sport and those types, the sport dwindled.
Yeah, yeah.
The support for it dwindled.
Yeah, she was a real, I think, a big influence, don't you? It's sort of like Arnold was for the men.
She was, there's absolutely no question about it. She was the influence.
Yeah.
Because she had muscle, she could pose, she was pretty, not totally necessary, but her whole package was great.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of women patterned after that.
Yes.
Because it was attainable.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. you know, I had been in, you know, group meetings with amateurs and pros. And let me tell you, speaking up when they speak, they don't sound like women.
Right. I know.
They don't. Yeah. I would sit there thinking, okay, what am I doing here? Yeah. But I always managed to creep into the top 5, 6, you know, except of course in the pros, I started going down as the drugs went. What happened is I think they were testing, but they didn't always, they just used it as a deterrent. Mm-hmm. They, most of the time, nobody flunked. Sometimes they flunked, but you know, let's say you're in the top 6, that would put you in the top 5 if someone ahead of you got disqualified.
Yeah.
But then you never knew if that was true or not, if they were disqualified or do they give you the money that you deserve for 5th instead of 6th.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of stuff was just kind of swept under.
Wait, so, what year do you think it really started, Janet? Because you got into it in the 80s. Did you see it change?
I would say by 87.
Okay.
88.
Yeah.
And then after 88, of course, that was my first Olympia. After 88, it was like, whoa.
Yeah. Yeah.
And yeah, they were fast, but.
I lived in Chicago. That's where I was born. And I won the 1986 Illinois State Championships in the MPC. And I became friends with the girl that won the women's division. And then she went to the nationals that year and she was natural. She never took any drugs and she had a good physique, but she came back and she was like, oh my God, those women are so huge. You know, Kathleen Skidmore.
Don't remember her.
Yeah. I don't think she ever did anything on the national level. Cause I think after that, she was like, I'm done.
Oh, you know? Yeah. I don't want to do that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I kind of thought I could, you know, I felt that a lot of times when people take drugs, they still are, their body is their body. Their genetics are their genetics.
Yeah.
Big upper body, little upper body, whatever their problem area is going to stay that problem area. Overall, yeah. It would be bigger.
Yeah.
So I still felt that symmetry could win as long as you are hard as a rock, you know, enough size. And I just kept thinking that. And, you know, so many times I would be called the dark horse, you know, because yeah. Look at her. She's so tiny. Yes, don't worry about her. But on stage, you could look bigger.
Yeah.
Your muscle bellies. So, you know, I thought, okay, well, I could probably manage that. But after a while, it was just too overwhelming.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because then the tall girls could get the bulk.
Yeah.
Beginning, most of the really good bodybuilders, I think even in the men, were smaller, shorter stature because mm-hmm. they could fill out their body with some muscle. Whereas a taller person takes longer to get that kind of bulk.
Yeah.
So drugs help the taller people blossom or whatever you would want to call that.
Yeah. I could always see, I guess, the appeal in women taking steroids because women naturally have more body fat than men. And I know like one of the big criteria is you got to be super ripped and super hard. So I could imagine a woman trying to do it naturally. It's going to be hard for her to get rid of all that fat and get really ripped. So I could see that, you know, by taking steroids, you're building up a little muscle, you're getting harder. So I could see how it could kind of creep in there. And it's just a shame that, you know, I guess everybody's competitors and they all want an edge. So it's inevitable that it's going to change sooner or later, right?
It really is inevitable. I was lucky that I found, or John Perillo found me.
Oh, okay.
Had a vitamin company and he used this MCT oil called.
Yeah, I remember that.
Time. Mm-hmm. That was a big turning point for me. I was working with John a lot and I promoted his supplements and everything after a while. And that CapTri really did it for me. And believe me, I ate carbs. I did it all, but that just hardened my body and accelerated things.
No kidding.
Yeah. In fact, I used to make oatmeal cookies with oatmeal and just CapTri. And I would bake them. And that stuff would burn at a low temperature, so you had to cook them slow. And I would just eat cookies. I'd eat oatmeal cookies. And it just filled you up and made your muscles look full. And it gave you energy, but it didn't, you know, hold any water like a carb, but it gave you tons of energy. So I think he really was a big help for me at that point. And that was around 80. That was in the 88, 87. Okay.
So when you started off, you said you were thin. So your challenge was you had to build up your upper body. You had to build.
I was 95 pound kid. I was always a little kid, but I was strong. I was wiry and strong.
How long did that take then to develop some muscular?
Well, I would say it took about 4 years. Because let's say I started training roughly 80, 81, 82, 83. I did my first show. And, you know, reasonable amount of muscle, but I wouldn't say I was, I've never been bulky. But I could look bigger by the way I posed and because I have small joints.
Did you have a hard time getting cut for shows?
Not really.
No,
good. Occasionally I would do something stupid, but the cap try really helped get hard though. It really did.
So the cap try was like a faster burning fat, right?
Exactly. It burns very fast. It works like carbohydrate in your body. So it gives you energy and you could drop out some of your starchy carbs and replace it with that.
Okay.
And I was taking it by the spoonsful, like 4, 5, 6, 7 tablespoons a day. And I just used it for salad dressing. I used it for everything. Of course, you still have to, you know, eat well. I mean, I ate a lot of food. I never deleted calories. I just afford to because my muscles would just shrink.
So you had that faster metabolism. So the cap try was a fat. So that has higher calories.
Yes.
So that probably helped with the greater calorie intake for you.
It did boost your metabolism even more, but it allowed you to eat more so that, you know, I'd see people on stage shaking because they were depleted. I never shook. I'm like, what is with these people? Just eat. So, they had to delete a lot of things. I didn't eat stupid. I didn't eat ice cream. But I knew the things that would help me maintain my strength and balance through your body as you competed. So liver and onions and lima beans was like my favorite meal because it was a lot of bees. It made you feel full and strong and like a rock in the morning. So that was always my pre-contest meal.
That's interesting. That came out around that time too, because I remember the 80s, it was like the low fat diets, right? It was the higher carb, low fat diets.
And, you know, I don't think I ever ate that much fat anyway. So that wasn't an issue either. But for a lot of people, I mean, you know, there was a phase of eating some burgers, you know, just figuring to get some bulk. I mean, one year, 1986, I got married and I thought, okay, this is a year to take off, bulk up, and see if I can get some, you know, get some good food in me and get stronger. And that year I was eating burgers and everything you could possibly think of. And I figured I could get stronger. I went up, you know, my off season weight might've been 124. I went up to maybe 135, huge amount of weight on my frame. Just round. I was no stronger.
Oh, really?
Stronger. So I'm like, the heck with that. I'm never doing that again. So I came back down and just trained my butt off. And that was, you know.
Yeah.
That didn't work. I guess if you're doing drugs, it works. But it didn't. So I tried it and I didn't like it. So I wouldn't do it again.
Let me take you back to those early contests. So you did that one big one, the Big Apple. And how did you do in that?
I got third.
Okay.
I was ecstatic. My goal in my head was
two women.
I figured if I get fifth, I won't be embarrassed.
Yeah.
Anything under that, and I got third. I was extremely excited. And I think I held up well to the winners and they were New Yorkers. Let me tell you know, bodybuilding is subjective.
Right.
I never said I got ripped off ever. Every judge has an opinion and it's not going to be, you could win today and go fifth tomorrow, same body,
right?
Different judges.
Right.
But I felt good about it. You know, third place was good for that show.
Okay.
So after that, I think I went into the USA then. I don't really even remember.
Oh, you went to the national level after that then, huh?
Yeah. As soon as I was qualified to do it, I did it.
Okay.
Because I just wanted to get some experience.
Okay.
How to diet, how to look. 83. But the nationals. Okay. Then I went into the 84 nationals. I have a little list here.
All right.
I got second in the nationals and I got first in the USA that year.
Oh, okay. So what were the national level shows like, Janet, back then?
They were not friendly.
Really?
People would just look at you, you know, you didn't really know anybody. And yeah, it was like everybody's doing their own thing. Some people had trainers with them, you know, putting their oil on. And
yeah,
it was tense. It was tense. It was like, this is business. Mm-hmm. So, and there, it was a good field, though, in that year. It was still a pretty big field. I would say maybe 16 people per class or something like that.
Okay.
So, hey, second was good. First was great.
Yeah.
Overall, I didn't even think about, you know, you have these goals. And, I, you know, if I just get first, I'll be happy.
Yeah.
Overall, that's a whole nother thing. But yeah, you know, there were some overalls because, you know, sometimes you hit it right. The coach stands out, something stands out, and you just edge somebody out. And that's how that all goes.
Did you get any feedback from like the writers of the magazines or from the judges?
Well, I got most of my feedback from the judges.
Okay.
After every show, I mean, I come from art school background and thrive on criticism.
Oh, yeah.
Constructive criticism. It's like, okay, sometimes it's anonymous and you're crushed, but I learned to deal with that. So I would go right down to the judges as soon as the show was over and say, okay, what could I do? What could I, well, shouldn't I do? The posing, the, you know, my shape, my bulk, give me the whole lowdown.
Yeah.
And they did. And it was very helpful. So I pretty much went with that because they're the guy, they're the people that are going to be judging me in the future.
Yeah.
So as far as the writers and the photographers, they all say, oh, you're great, because they want you to stand for the photographs, you know, and some of them are honest and some of them you don't know. But I just put more all my eggs in the basket of the judges.
Was it exciting getting in the magazine the first time?
Oh, gosh, yeah.
Yeah.
In fact, I guess when I won the USA, I didn't know that after the show, all the winners get pictures taken. I didn't know any of that.
Yeah.
I mean, I was truly just fishing. I had no clue. And so I went home. And somebody got a little picture of me in a dressing room, and this was first place, and like, where'd Janet go? I was like, huh, maybe I did something wrong.
Right.
People hang out and they get their pictures taken. Okay.
Right.
And, that one little picture, my mother lived in Florida then. And she had that magazine and she was all over work. She was everybody.
Yeah.
And it was a big deal. It was pretty cool.
The magazines were everything back then. I mean, if you made it in the magazines, that was the big
thing. Sure. I mean, that was it.
We all read them and, you know.
It's not like everything on YouTube these days.
Right. No,
forever. It's amazing how limited we were.
Yeah.
You know, as far as, I mean, even just, you know, reaching out to competitors at that time. You know, you had buddies throughout the whole competitive career.
Yeah.
It wasn't like you were on the phone all the time with everybody.
Right.
And you can just text them and say, how you doing? Or
Right.
It was like they lived in Jibip and you might see them at another show. And it's like, oh, my God, you know, so see you.
Yeah.
But I lived in New Jersey. I never went to California. I spent a little time there, but no, I'm an East Coast girl.
Yeah. Isn't it crazy how things are today? Everything's on the internet. Everything's on YouTube. You know, everything's changed so much because of that.
Oh,
well, the magazines are gone now, you know, so.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I cherish my few magazines that I keep in my basement. And
take care
of them. But yeah, now, I mean, especially after this whole pandemic and this craziness that we've gone through.
Yeah.
I do a lot of work internationally on Zoom.
You know? Yeah.
Working with people and Pilates mostly. I've had a few bodybuilders pop into my classes though.
Oh yeah. Oh, cool.
In the past that, I didn't know well, but I knew of them.
Yeah.
So it's kind of interesting.
Yeah. You know,
interesting time, but I'd go back in a minute.
Yeah. I hear you. Me too. I wish I could go back to the '80s.
Just simple and no less. We know too much.
Yeah.
Everything. You know. Yeah.
So So 1988 then was the year you won the Nationals, right?
Yeah, 88 was that pivoting year. I would say that was my best year.
Okay.
Because somehow I just hit it right. I was big enough, hard enough,
mm-hmm.
Timing in the right show at the right time. You know,
yeah.
Sometimes it's just that way. It's by
chance. Yeah. Yeah.
You could plan, but it doesn't mean you're going to succeed.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So I just hit it right. I won the Nationals, and then I went on to Puerto Rico to win the Worlds.
Oh, okay. You won the Worlds.
Randy McNally told me that. You know, she flew in with me. She was on the plane.
Okay.
She kept looking at me. She goes, "Geez, Janet, your veins have veins." And I thought, I mean, I didn't know I looked that great. You know what I mean? You
yeah.
only know what you see every day. You don't know yeah. how you're there. So I thought, oh, that's kind of good. She never said that to me. Because Sandy was a real mentor also. She, mm-hmm. I would call her and she would talk to me about what I need.
Yeah.
So I had a feeling it was good, especially after the weigh-in. You know, they had the weigh-ins then.
Yeah.
And they were all like buzzing when I got up on the scale. So I thought,
oh, okay.
Fine. So I just went back to my room and painted myself with some more tan.
Yeah.
And after the whole show was over, I won the light. Laura Beaudry won the overall. And yeah. Lisa, I think, Lisa Loria won the middleweight.
Lisa Loria, right. Yeah.
So we were so happy together. But Sandy said, what happened to your tan? If you were darker for the night show, you could possibly have won the overall. Because I consciously did. And I'm like, I am done with that stuff. I cannot do another leg. Right? The last little thing to do.
Right, right.
So I was like, oh, why did you even have to tell me that?
Where was the contest that year?
Pardon me?
Where was the Nationals that year?
I was in Puerto Rico. Oh, you mean the Nationals?
Yeah, the Nationals.
Where were the Nationals that year? You know what? I don't remember. The 88 Nationals. Were they in New York?
I think so. Yeah, I got. Well, here, I'll show everybody. I got the magazine.
Yeah, right. I'm thinking it was New York.
I think you're right.
You know what? I think it was New York.
As it mentions in the first paragraph, that's Jim. Yeah, New York City's Hunter College.
September 16th. Okay. Yeah, that's why I didn't ring a bell because it was at just some college.
Yeah.
You know, the Big Apple Classic was right in the city. You know, yeah. Of course, the Olympia, you never forget the Beacon Theater.
Right, right.
Yeah, that was just amazing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was New York. That's right. So not a lot of traveling. So that was an easy trip for me too.
Yeah.
And that
yeah.
all has to do with it. I didn't have to stay over. I just went the night before. That's right. I remember now lugging my suitcase through the bus terminal and then dragging it down the street. You know, those days you can travel. Well, you can even fly, but I traveled heavy. I took a toaster oven.
Really?
I made my cookies in my room.
Wow.
When I did the Pro Worlds in, I think it was Santa Monica, that could have been 89, I blew out the whole floor electricity of the Holiday Inn. And I was like, my husband's like, hide the oven. Put it under the bed. Get out of here.
Oh my God.
Purple. Because I was making my Cap Dry cookies. Yeah. They were my snacks. You know, that's a long day you compete and you have to keep feeding little bits. Well, it was the oven and then the hair dryer
That was it.
Boom. Everything shut down. The air conditioner, everything.
That's hilarious. Oh my God.
I was really scared though, so I didn't bake anymore.
Yeah. I've done that even like recently, I'm embarrassed to say, you know, I'm dieting for something and I'll bring my food with me and I'll bring the hot plate and my friend was staying with me. He's like, "What are you doing?" He's taking pictures of it. It was just like, I'm like, this is how we used to do it back in the day.
Hey, it's your way of life. You know, you get used to that and you become so self-sufficient.
Yeah.
You know, food, I stay in this room all day And I don't bring electricity things with me, but I have food and a cooler and what I need for the whole day. And I'm never hungry. Yeah. And I keep up my energy. So you just learn to do that. And it's so convenient. Why not?
Right,
The igloo is a way of life.
So what was the World Championships like in Puerto Rico? I forgot about that one.
Yeah, that was really cool, actually. That was so different. Because, you know, we flew in. Oh, here we are. You know, palm trees and the actual hotel, which I, this is the things that I, that really stood out to me, was kind of outside. You know, the whole lobby was in the air. It was almost like a big old overhang and it was very humid. And I'm like, wow, is this where we check in? You know, so it was kind of cool. And the rest of it was actually very friendly because by then, you know, people.
Yeah.
You know, and I couldn't wait to see Lisa and we were all kind of doing things together. And of course the photographers are now your friends, you know, and you see them and it's kind of a big reunion.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and it's like, okay, we're here now. So this is awesome. And, so basically you're just scheduling photo shoots and things outside. And there were a lot of really fabulous photo shoots there because of the background.
Oh, yeah, I can imagine, yeah.
The dark sky with that partial sun. And I'm sure the photographers loved it, too, because it's so different than just the old backdrop.
Yeah. You know, oh, yeah, for sure.
Real backdrop. Some of the best photos probably came out of that shoot, except for a few that Mike Neveu did of me from the Olympia. He did some beautiful work.
Yeah, he's a great photographer.
Yeah, they're artists. These guys are artists. So
yeah.
You want them to take your picture.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they make you look great.
What was the competition like in that show?
Oh, the competition was good. I mean, you know, everybody was in pretty good shape. I'm trying to even remember. You know, I felt so confident from just those few things that Sandy said to me.
Mm-hmm.
That I just kind of would glance around and this was all done at the weigh-in. I felt from the weigh-in, I was in good shape.
Yeah.
I wasn't saying I'm a shoo-in, but I felt good.
Yeah.
So the competition was good, but I just felt that my hardness that year, which I pretty much couldn't even duplicate again. It just is how things come together. You know, stress has a lot to do with it. When you're stressed, you get lean.
Yeah.
I get lean when I'm stressed. So for me, stress is good.
Oh, really? Okay. You don't hold water from stress, huh?
No. I get like a rock. and I can eat all day and it doesn't go anywhere.
Right, right. So
it's just interesting how everybody has to learn their own bodies. And I think it takes a long time to learn your body.
Yeah.
It's a living thing and you're trying to manipulate it.
Yeah, so, it's interesting when you compete so much. You do have some shows that just everything goes your way, like you said. And other shows, it's like everything goes against you. It's almost like you can't predict it.
What happened? Except when you eat dirty rice beforehand. One of my early shows, it was somewhere in Pennsylvania. Right the day before, I was starving. I'm like, oh, let's go to Popeye's, get some of that rice. Dirty rice, full of sodium. And I smoothed it.
Oh, yeah.
So that was a lesson learned.
Yeah. So you win the Nationals, you win the World Championship. So then you start the pro career then after that?
Yes.
Okay.
After the Worlds, that qualified me to enter the Olympia.
Oh, okay. Cool. So was that your first pro show?
Pardon me?
That was your first pro show, the Olympia?
Yes.
Okay.
So the World Amateur Championships was actually an IFBB show.
Yeah.
And Wayne D'Amelia called me. And no texting, no email.
Right.
And he invited me to the Olympia. I'm like, woohoo. And now, of course, even at the Worlds, they paid for everything.
Yeah.
Which was a big deal.
Yeah.
So that was it. And the Olympia was in New York. Again, my kind of show. I don't have to travel far. I don't have to go through. You do have to be there.
Right.
Before the day before any, whatever they said. And that was interesting because this was my first, you know, these are all the people I've seen compete.
Yeah.
A little intimidating, but coming off of my wins, I felt good.
Yeah, felt confident.
And, you know, I could hold that shape pretty well. I still wasn't as hard as the world's.
Yeah.
I think there was a good, could have been 7 or 8 weeks in between.
Okay.
I'm just guessing, but there was a span because I remember Sandy saying, can you duplicate this? I'm like, a lot of time in between.
Yeah.
I'll come up and I'll try to come down. I can't hold it all that time.
Yeah.
So I remember when we, you know, we checked in. Now there's these big meetings. This is one of those meetings I told you about.
Okay.
You know, you come into be at such and such a play room at this time. I'm like, whoa, okay. And I sit down on the chair and they, of course, I'm early. I'm always on time. I'm always early. I'm on my I'm sitting there. I'm like, ugh. And as they stroll in, I'm like, oh my God, she's big. Oh my God, she's big. And I'm dressed all the way to my neck. And then, you know, they come in, sit down, and I get to, I don't know a lot of them because some of them are foreigners. And then I hear these voices, and their voices were rough. And wow. They were unrecognizable as women. And I am like, whoa, what in the world am I doing here? So that really turned me off, you know. You know, I came from my mother, you know, when I was a kid, our refrigerator was covered with supplements. She was always into health and wellness. Prevention Magazine, that little.
Yeah, I remember that.
Was like her Bible. She loved reading that. Read this, Janet. Now read this. So it was always about health for me and longevity, taking care of your body, getting strong within your genetics. And do whatever you can with this good and natural wholesome.
Yeah.
So when I saw this, I was just, you know, pretty bummed. Not because I can't beat these people, but because it's a shame. Because I always go back to Rachel. I always go back to Rachel McClish.
Mm-hmm.
Of how wonderful she looked and how big the sport was.
Yeah.
At this point, I was getting feedback from people like, oh, you're one of those? You know, those women, right? It wasn't like, wow, I saw Rachel McClish. No, now it's like, oh, you're one of those?
Yeah.
Made me really feel bad, you know, because I worked so hard and women worked so hard and now they're trying to look like men.
Wow.
Why? What's the point?
Did they know that you were drug free? Did they look down on you because of that also?
Definitely, because I didn't like say, oh, you know, you shouldn't be doing that.
Yeah.
I just spoke about what I thought, just like I am now. I believe that taking drugs are wrong.
Yeah.
And if you want to get a little edge, well, then shame on you. You know, I mean, why don't we compete on an equal playing field? Some people have better genetics. Great.
Yeah.
Some people don't have genetics. Oh, well, you know, work harder.
Yeah.
But it just kind of, a little bit of a turning point for me. And I figured I will do this until I don't want to do it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because this is not my route. I will not go this route.
Yeah.
And I won't be chased out of the organization that I've been competing in from the start because of that. So I'm doing the way I'm doing it, do it to the best of my ability. And then I'll just say goodbye.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's pretty much what I did. I competed in like 3 Olympias, I think.
Okay.
Arnold's show was wonderful. I did Arnold's show, the Miss International, 3 or 4 times.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And that was actually my favorite show because he treated us so well.
Yeah, yeah.
He treated us like real competitors, not like, you know, we just want you to get done with this so that, you know, we could sell some tickets.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. I watched some of your interviews with Boyer Co.
Yeah.
A part that I couldn't believe was Wayne D'Amelio was who organized all of our things at that point. I knew no one was different, but they made the bodybuilders go out and sell tickets.
Yeah. Right.
Like,
at the gyms. They had to go to the gyms and sell tickets.
I was like, oh my God, they'd never want me to do that because I'm a terrible salesperson. I thought, whoa, things have so changed. So we actually reaped the benefits of his
in the 80s.
So that was some great interviews. I enjoyed watching those. But there's a history, such a history. You know, the men had way more history.
Yeah, yeah.
Women's history is 1980 on.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
But it's interesting to talking to competitors like you who were there pretty much at the start in the 80s.
Right, almost at the start, yeah.
Yeah, especially someone who did it drug-free like you did, you know.
Yeah, it was, you know, it made you train hard. Mm-hmm. But for me being a competitive person, knowing that I probably can't win, but I could place is good. But at some point that it just wasn't enough.
Yeah.
It was just too overwhelming on stage.
Yeah. It was like, what's the point?
And it was like all of a sudden apples and oranges.
Yeah. Right. Right.
And I understood that. I tried a few times and I saw the trend.
Yeah.
And that's when I called Wayne. I said, you know, I'm not going to do this anymore because I just don't feel you guys have a handle on the drug situation. And I just don't see a place for me here anymore.
What did he say?
He said, I understand, you know, but you know, the big muscles were selling tickets, but I don't believe it. I just don't believe that because what happened in the early 80s.
Yeah. Look how many tickets they were selling. Right.
You know, people like me, nobody tried to sell me a ticket.
Yeah.
I was, how do I get in there? I want to see this.
Right.
And there's a lot of women that would do that. And there's a gap here now. There's a gap because those kind of women competing are not that I don't even look at them.
Yeah.
I have no desire. And I'm sure most of the female population is like that.
Right. Right.
But I mean, people work out, but they don't have anything to work towards. I mean, competition helps you train harder and it's fun and it gives you an idea of where, how you compare to others in a good way, you know?
Yeah.
So it's a shame that there's a gap there now. Then they have fitness shows. Doesn't do it for me either.
Right. Well, I wanted to ask you something that relates to today's world. I don't know how much you follow what's going on in today's bodybuilding world, but just recently they've had a string of amateur. I think it was there were some pros. A bunch of bodybuilders, men and women, dying because of they think it's mostly because of diuretic use. They're using these diuretics toward the end to get really, really dry and hard. And even like, believe it or not, like bikini competitors are doing this. You know, a lot of bikini competitors are using diuretics. A lot of bikini girls are using drugs to get harder, which is unbelievable. But this is what's going on. So how did you, when you were getting lean for shows, you said you were going to the world championships, you had veins on top of veins. How did you get lean? Was it just basically diet, training?
Yeah, it was diet and training and eating up. I would go low carbs for a few days.
Okay.
Before the contest.
Okay.
Actually, two. I could only go 2 days on a low carb diet. And that was basically 75 carbs per day. And I am a high carb person.
Yeah.
And if I don't have enough carbohydrate, my lifts literally go numb. That is my ticket. Get the carbs in. It's amazing.
Wow.
So I had all these little things I could figure out on because of the way my body reacted.
Yeah.
But then right before the show, I introduced a lot of foods that help you shed water and hold the carbs in.
Okay.
And that was lima beans high in potassium.
Hmm.
And that was liver high in B vitamins.
Yeah.
And onions, a crazy diuretic.
Hmm. Wow.
So I would take onions, a whole onion, and fry the crap out of it in Captrat.
Yeah.
In MCT. And then I would eat lima beans and liver for dinner right before the show. I would wake up, veins on top of veins.
No kidding.
Sip of wine backstage.
Yeah.
Boom.
Wow.
And it also relaxes you. I mean, an inch of wine. I mean, that much.
And so when you did the low carbs for a couple of days, would you go back up in carbs before the show or?
Yes.
Okay. How much would you go?
Very high. Limas are high in carbohydrate.
Oh, really? I see. Okay.
Yeah. So I
would, those foods that you're adding to get drier also have the carbs.
Yes.
Okay. Gotcha.
And the onion shed the water, and the bees and the liver just made you feel strong and completely stable.
Yeah.
So it's really just stabilizing the blood levels, making sure you have enough water. You know, there's water in the lima beans. You didn't have to drink. I would just sip water.
Okay.
Just sip.
Okay.
I never, ever took a diuretic or depleted water.
Yeah.
You know, it's crazy. You could
crazy.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, it's even crazier is a lot of these girls who are getting into competing in bikini particularly, they're hiring these coaches. And I don't know if they don't have any background in nutrition or anything, but they rely on the coach for everything. The coach tells them, here's how you train. Here's what you eat. This is take these pills before the show, and it's diuretics or drugs or whatever. And they're just clueless, and they're not learning this stuff on their own like you did.
Exactly. I think they just put too much stock in what somebody else knows.
The coach. Yeah.
Than they do.
Right.
And I've, you know, it also has to do with the generation.
Yeah.
Doing the hard work.
Yeah.
It also has to do with personality type. I mean, I'm a bit of a control freak, so.
No one's going to tell you what to do.
I mean, I'll listen. That doesn't mean I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
I'll take some advice, but not all advice. So it's a lot of things go into that too. But there is a type of individual that just say, just tell me what to do and I'll do it.
Yeah.
And disaster, you know, not good. And what if that person gets mad at you and now you're on your own?
Yeah. Right.
So get self-sufficient and learn your own body.
Absolutely.
That's the other thing. No one can tell you this works for your body.
Right.
Because let me tell you, what I did doesn't mean it's going to work for everybody in the same way.
Yeah.
It can only try it, tweak it, whatever. Yeah, certain foods have certain properties, for sure.
Yeah.
You know, things are diuretics in food. Onions, a great one.
Yeah.
But does it agree with you?
Yeah.
Everybody's biology is just different.
Right.
So you have to take it with a grain of salt, try it way out. And believe me, I tried all these diet things way out of context.
Yeah.
You know, I would weigh myself. I would take pictures. I would take videos just to see from another. You can't look in the mirror and see all the time. You have to like close the camera, open the camera, and oh, that person looks terrible there and good there. Even though it's you, you have a different viewpoint than looking in the mirror.
Yeah. Right?
So you want to see yourself from different ways. And maybe you have someone that'll really tell you the truth. Maybe you don't.
Yeah.
So you can rely on some people, but not everybody.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Do you remember Jerry Branum doing an interview with Jerry?
Oh, I do. I love Jerry. He was such a cool guy, or is a cool guy. I don't know.
Yeah. I have him on the show all the time. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. I should watch some of those.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Jerry. Yeah. Yeah. He did an article on me back a ways. Playing by the rules or something?
Uh-huh.
He did a great article. Yeah, he's really good. In fact, he did an article and it was kind of based on the reason that I didn't do any drugs.
Oh, really? Okay.
Actually, at some point, you know, you get frustrated and it's like, well, maybe if I just did a little of something that didn't hurt me, but gave me a little push over, just got my biceps a little bit bigger.
Yeah.
So I was actually just not deciding to do anything, but I thought, let me just talk to somebody that knows about these things and see what is the deal with these things. What do they do to the body? What do they do for the people? I know zero. So I was going to make an appointment with someone that, somebody told me, this is the person you want to talk to. And that morning, I'm a Christian and every morning I read the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
And now I read it on my phone. Then I read it in the paper Bible, right?
Right.
And this could not have happened if I was using my phone. So that's kind of interesting.
Yeah.
But you know, I had this big old Bible I would just leave on the desk. And I opened it. And usually I would start in Psalms or Proverbs. And that day I just thought, open it. And I ended up in a book called Timothy. 2 Timothy was book 2 of Timothy. And it was chapter 2, verse 5. And it said, and it totally freaked me out. And if you are an athlete, compete by the rules or accept no prize.
Hmm.
I was like, I got chills. I was like looking around like, did somebody put a marker in this book? I was like, okay, that's all I need. Goodbye. I'm not going to call that guy. I'm done. Done. Yeah. Sticking to my guns. That's it. It was weird.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was weird. But let me tell you, I paid attention.
Yeah. Somebody was telling you something. Yeah.
That was quite specific, I would say.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much life, you know.
Right.
Do the best you can. Compete by the rules. And if you're not meant to be there, then
you know, you're
just not meant to be doing it. But that was, I think, the whole gist of that article that Jerry Branham did.
Mm-hmm.
He did a great job. He was just such a down-to-earth kind of guy, right?
Yeah.
So nice. A lot of, you know, there's so many great people in bodybuilding. I mean, you know, you forge these great friendships because you're all under this incredible stress, you know,
yeah.
And you're all in it together. And in my experience, when a group of people are doing a hard task together, whether it's in school, competition, there's a bond there.
Yeah, you know? For sure.
And some people gravitate towards others, but it's an interesting bond because it gives you support.
Yeah.
You know, the support of people that understand exactly what you're going through.
Exactly. Right.
And that's the kind of thing that I had with some people in bodybuilding, like Lisa. Jerry was, I felt very close to him, even though I may have only seen him four times.
You know? Yeah, yeah.
It's always intense under those situations. There's this kind of pressure, and you get there quicker.
Yeah.
You know, just a fast merging of friendships.
Yeah. Well, so, he talked about you on our interview, so I'll tell him I talked to you. He'll be happy to hear
that. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think he did that interview in the hotel room, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
You know, so it was pretty relaxed.
Yeah.
You
know? Yeah.
A lot of those interviews were done. And of course they had photo shoots in the hotel rooms.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Right. So what are you doing now, Janet? You're teaching Pilates?
Yeah. I have this studio, and basically I learned about Pilates in the 80s, and I wish I would have gone forward and worked with that then as well. But of course, in bodybuilding, I was too engrossed that I was doing competing. But as soon as I finished bodybuilding, I started doing Pilates in 90.
Okay.
And I saw it as a incredible segue from weights into the inside of the body. It really centers on the core of the body. And I didn't pay any attention to core when I was doing weights. It was all extremities. So you work from the outside in weights. In Pilates, you work from the inside out.
Right, right.
And you strengthen the root joints, the shoulders, the hips, the back, the abdominals. It was game changer. Mm. Any compression in the low back, gone, you know, from squatting. Any, you know, I didn't have too many injuries because I was a very careful trainer. But, of course, age will get you eventually sometime.
Yeah.
But Pilates just keeps you mobile and flexible, and the merge of two of them. So I do Pilates 3 days, and I do weights 2 to 3 days.
Okay.
And that's how I train every single week and never stopped.
Okay.
You know, been doing that since way back. So, you know, took me a year to get certified in Pilates, and I have been studying for 20 years now.
Okay. Wow. And,
you know, it's a international organization now. It's based in Sweden.
Mm-hmm.
And we are all connected now because of the internet and everything.
Yeah. So yeah.
It's very interesting. So, but I got certified in New York, and now it's, you know, all over the world. So.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome. You look great. It looks like you're really following the fitness lifestyle. So it's awesome.
Thank you. Yeah. I don't know anything else.
Yeah. Right. I hear you.
You know, on the weekends, I try not to move.
Yeah.
And it's really hard because, yeah, you got to recover, but you wake up and it's like, I just feel like I have to move. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's I try true. To not so that I can just rest everything.
Yeah.
But, just a way of life. And basically that's what it should be, right?
Yeah.
you move, you oil up your joints, and everything works well. And mm-hmm. if you don't, it gets brittle, cracks, and then you have pain. So right. a no-brainer, right? Move.
So do you teach these classes through Zoom, like you said?
I can teach classes through Zoom. I can do privates, like one-on-one through Zoom.
Okay, all right.
I have now people coming back into the studio. So a lot of my clients have returned since the pandemic.
Okay.
But a lot of them have not returned because, you know, they might be elderly and their families want them to stay home. They're afraid. There's still yeah. a lot of fear going on.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I can go in the gym and teach personal training, or I could come into the studio and do Pilates training. People do one day there, one day here.
Okay.
Yeah. And of course, I fill in at home in my pajamas on Zoom.
Yeah. Well, I'll put your website on the link, on the information here, so if people want to contact you, you know.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah, they can always contact me through the website and just drop into a class, or just, you know, message me or email me, and we can do privates.
Yeah, you know, okay. All right.
So that we get you going before you get injured.
Yeah, before you get too old.
That's the goal.
Right,
get it
right.
going before the injury. This way, when you're injured, you already know how to take care of that.
Yeah, okay. Well, Janet, it was great talking to you, great meeting you, and I'm so glad you had the chance to sit down with us and talk about your career.
Same here. And what a walk down memory lane, right?
Yeah.
Well, it was awesome. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it was my pleasure. So maybe we'll get to talk again one day. You have a great personality, and I love talking.
Absolutely. You know how to get me, so I'm around
all, right.
all places.
Okay.
Have a great right, one.
Thank you. Take care.
Nice to meet you in person.
Nice to meet you, too.
Bye.
All right. Thanks for listening to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Thank you to Janet Tech for joining us on the show. I really enjoyed talking to her. Thanks to our sponsor, Florida Alternative Medicine, for sponsoring another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. And thank you again to all our Patreon donors who generously donate money to the Bodybuilding Legends podcast every month. You guys help keep the show going, so I really appreciate your donations. Don't know how much I appreciate you guys. And if you're interested in becoming a Patreon donor yourself, you can just go to the bodybuildinglegendshow.com website, and you can see the Patreon link in the upper right-hand corner and be a Patreon donor yourself, if you so wish. All right, before I let you guys go, I want to go back in time here and read a old Flex magazine. This is from February 1989. And I'm going to read two articles. And the first one is about the 1988 NPC Women's Nationals. So it was written by Bill Reynolds, editor-in-chief of Flex Magazine. And it starts off, "You could have gotten long odds and come up rich going into this year's NPC Women's Nationals if you'd bet on Laura Boudry for overall champ. She had placed only fourth in her class the previous year. And with a rep for enduring killer doses of pre-contest jitters each year, chances would have been good that the Gold's Gym Venice redhead would end up flat, appearing at New York City's Hunter College last September 16th. Laura's never heard of pre-nationals form sheets, however, and pulled down all but one first-place vote in her heavyweight class before easily disposing of lightweight champ Janet Tech and middleweight champion Lisa Lorio Smith in the pose-down for the overall national title. Boudry has long been known for her sensational muscle density and hyper-deep cuts, and that was clearly the winning formula for her this year. No one in the entire competition looked as muscular. The national championships were ably and superbly promoted by Steve Carroll and his Muscle Media Inc. group, which includes Andy Bastinto, president of the National Gym Association, Carl Campagna, New York Metro NPC chairman, and Gary Shevitt, a major television tech. Steve had lined up four major sponsors: Lucky Star, manufacturer and distributor of posing attire and sportswear; Ironman Magazine; Pure Power, a food supplement company; and Powerhouse Gym, with franchise headquarters in the Detroit, Michigan area. The competition was taped by ESPN, and I'm sure many readers will see the highlights on their cable channel. ESPN tends to play these competitions many times, so don't panic if you miss a telecast. They'll show it again. The post-competition party was held at Manhattan's Palladium, with many of the exhausted contestants whooping and eating it up. The mind and body crave a lot of forgotten stimuli once the pre-contest dietary and training regimens have been relaxed. It's always nice when a promoter schedules this type of get-together following a show. Now for the bad news. Dr. Bob Goldman was on hand to conduct drug tests, and four women were found positive for using one or another type of banned substance. The unfortunates were Mary Ellen Campo, Yvonne Vasquez, caught for the second consecutive year and therefore suspended from the MPC shows for 1 year, Nicole Bass, and Ray Hollett. All right, lightweight class. The lightweight class for women weighing up to 114 pounds was won by veteran Janet Tech from Marlton, New Jersey. And she appeared suitably stunned by her well-deserved victory, no doubt due to the fact that she has come very close in the past without tasting gold. Janet emerged as a national threat in this weight division by winning the 84 U.S. Championship, beating that year's eventual nationals victor, Marcia Radford. But over the past 4 years, Tech has been mired in one runner-up position after another, always falling short of the coveted national championship and its attendant trip to the IFBB World Championships. Last year, Janet did not attend the Nationals, preferring to spend extra time bringing up weak points. Prior to this year, Tech's primary physical deficiency had been her weak arm development, but you'd never have known it by her appearance here. Somehow, Janet has figured out how to bring up her arms to the level of the rest of her outstanding physique, finally achieving the type of proportional balance we've come to expect from our national champs. Janet Tech has great musculature and a good torso development. Her back double bicep shot was the best in the entire competition, and it went a long way toward winning her the title. With her arms up, she now has a complete package set off by a nicely effective posing routine. The national championship has been a long time in coming to Tech, and her victory this year was well-deserved. She has to be a favorite at the World Championships. For the second consecutive year, the number two lightweight was Sharon Lewis from Cleveland, Ohio. Tina Plackinger wrote a nice profile of Sharon. Sharon Lewis comes back and shows him in the July Flex. Since that profile appeared, Lewis has competed in the IFBB World Women's Amateur Invitational in Japan, placing second in the lightweights. Sharon's downfall at this year's nationals was marginally deficient quadriceps separation, which opened the door just enough for Tech to slide through. In 89, this class should be a catfight between Lewis and fellow Clevelander Diane Garrity. Third place fell easily to another veteran, Tucson, Arizona flash Diane Caridio, whom I believe I first saw compete in 1981. Diane was up two places from the previous year. She was also profiled in flex. Diane works for the post office and is trained by history's youngest Mr. America, Casey Viator. She had picked up a little extra mass in her torso and arms and improved her muscle density somewhat from the previous year. Bouncy Kyle Campbell from Fort Lauderdale, Florida, finished in fourth position, up from 13th the previous year. Kyle had dieted down considerably from last year, gaining enviable muscularity in the process. Her goal was to place in the top five, and she did so with a spot to spare. Campbell placed second in the middleweights at the 87 Florida Championships, plus won the mixed pairs that year. She and partner Scott Herman were fourth in the Nationals mixed pair competition this same evening. The last athlete in the top five was energetic Janelle Bogan from Boise, Idaho. While relatively unknown until this year when she placed sixth in the USA and fifth in the Nationals, Janelle has been competing since 1982 when bodybuilding won her away from the All-American gymnastics career at Boise State University. With a little more torso development, Bogan should move up in 89. In order, here are the women who placed 6th through 14th. There was one drug disqualification in this division. Ruth Hushor, Renee Musing, Vicky Sims, Judy Calvin, Judy Jean Chapman, Amy Klein, Judy Miller, Cynthia Dahl, and Sheila Bear. The middleweights class first place decision was incredibly close, with Lisa Lorio Smith finally eking out a narrow 2-placing point victory over Carol Mock. Unless you've been a 2-point victor in a physique competition, you probably don't know how close that is. It's the difference between two judges having placed you first and your opponent second, while all the other judges split first-place votes between the two of you. Lorio Smith moved up from 5th in 87 to 1st in the middleweights. She's a law enforcement officer from Baton Rouge, Louisiana. At 5'2 and 123 pounds, Lisa presented one of the most perfectly balanced and symmetrical physiques in the entire competition. She wasn't quite as muscular-appearing as Mock, so the balance and lines took her to the title. Flex featured Lisa Lorio Smith in the May issue, and we'll have one of Julian Schmidt's in-depth personality profiles of her in the next issue. I really admire her dedication because she's up at 5 a.m. every morning for the first workout of her double split, works as a juvenile officer all day, and then gets back into the gym at 5 p.m. for her second weight session. And she still has time to chase down obscure Zydeco tapes for the Flex editor-in-chief from time to time. Carol Mock from Oakland, California, nestled strongly in the second place. She was the 87 California middleweight champion and shows tremendous promise for future national-level competitions with her highly muscular physique. Carol has absolutely one of the best backs in the sport, and she made a great tactical decision in moving down from the heavyweight class at the USA, where she didn't place that well, to the middleweights at the Nationals. The resulting improvement in overall hardness shot her upward in the standings. Maritza Ramos from Cleveland, Ohio, also dropped down from heavyweight at the USA to middleweights here and ended up third. While Mock had been only 10th at the USA, Ramos had been fifth. Still, a drop in weight and improvement in muscularity took Maritza higher than many might have expected. Her delicate bone structure and large muscle volume surrounded petite joints give Ramos greatly enhanced symmetry, which should move her up even further next year. In fourth, in receiving my unofficial award for making the most improvement between Nationals entries, was Donna Barentine, actually from North Carolina. Donna has been living in Florida lately, where she's training under Tara Dodane's former coach. Always sporting fantastic leg development in the past, Donna had previously been too smooth to place even in the top 10 of her class nationally. But this year, she was drastically trained down and looked very muscular and completely developed from all angles. In 1987, she had won both the Eastern Seaboard and Atlantic Coast Championships. Congratulations on the great improvement, Donna. Fifth place went to Sinui Joan Hopfensperger from Plymouth, Minnesota. She's a former overall AAU Miss America, and she placed third behind Tani Imbriali and Shirley Kemper in the light heavyweight division at last year's USA. For sheer density and impressiveness, this is one of the real physiques, but a wide waist tends to hold her back from the higher placings she would otherwise take. Symmetry is still an important watchword at NPC national level shows. In 6th through 14th places, one drug disqualification in this class were Debbie Sider, Crystal Pember, Valerie Green, Athena Annis, Renita Harris from Chicago, Patty Sanchez, Elizabeth Van Sickle, Goldie Pedwell, and Amy Gray. And then the heavyweights. Since Julian Schmidt has penned one of his special profiles on heavyweight and overall victor Laura Boudry, I'll restrict comment in this space. Suffice it to say that she now has made good on the enormous promise she showed when she won the heavyweight class at the 85 USA. An improved Karen Pika from Hamilton Township, New Jersey, moved up from fourth at the USA in this class to second at the Nationals. And she's my pre-contest pick for the overall NPC National Champion in 89. Early in the year, Karen had also placed second at the Junior Nationals, so it's obvious that she's a quality bodybuilder. Pika also has a very powerful and athletic physique, to say nothing of being pleasing on the eyes. She could become one of the greats. Kathy Unger from New Milford, New Jersey, improved her placing from eighth at the USA to third here. As Katrina Poladero, she had been eighth at last year's Nationals. Kathy has a long, lean physique that will be awesome when she puts on 6 to 8 more pounds of muscle. Her shape and symmetry are enviable. Her muscularity is good as anyone in the class except for Boudry. How Kathy keeps that degree of contest muscularity is impressive because she works as a baker. Imagine having an empty stomach when all that warm bread comes out of the oven. Fourth place fell to rapidly improving Josie Cole, who had been seventh in the USA and won the USA mixed pairs title with Snake Adger. Josie's from the Bronx, New York. I wonder if she's a Yankees fan. She first gained national exposure by winning the overall title at the 86th Atlantic States Championship. Josie had one of the most original and entertaining free posing programs in the competition, and her physique is great. Rumor has it that she's trying to make a baby this year, but if not, Josie Cole will be in the top three at next year's Nationals. New York City's unbelievably muscular Adrian Foster took the final top five position. Foster is a protege of John Torelli, and she has won a whole string of titles on the East Coast, most recently the Gold's Classic. If you flash back to 1980, when Laura Combs won the first Nationals, and predict that a physique as good as Adrian Foster's would place fifth in her class at the 88 Nationals, people would have laughed at you. In order to finish the 6th through 13th places, two drug disqualifications went to Debbie McKnight, Tara Dodane, Cynthia Mentzer, Rhonda Ludsfield, Marissa Brown, Kathy Harrison, Catherine Miles, and Jennifer Lennon. The pose down was anticlimactic as Laura Boudry became quite easily the overall NPC national champion for 1988. All right. So, yeah, looking at the women here, they looked really impressive. Very ripped, but very symmetrical, as they said in the article, and very, very feminine still. It's interesting they did drug testing back then. I forgot about that. But I guess they were testing for anabolics as well as diuretics. All right, now I got one more article I want to read for you guys. This one was written by Tony Pearson, and it's called Beyond Raw Muscles. At contest time, colossal muscle often loses out to symmetry. When it comes to the art of bodybuilding, what we're talking about is symmetry. We're talking about how precisely the muscles tie in, their shape, their fullness and balance, how every bit of musculature flows aesthetically from the arms and shoulders down to the calves. To me, this is the ideal to which a bodybuilder should aspire. The creation of lines that draw the eye over the entire human frame, the way the eye is compelled to move when viewing such physiques as Samir Banuts, Mohamed Makaways, or Bob Paris's. To me, that is our art form. More than the simple development of a specific body part to its ultimate size and muscularity, what matters are the relationships of the muscles to one another. Anyone can build big muscles, but it takes a keen and discriminating bodybuilder to mold the entire body into a curvilinear presence. If attention is not paid to enhancing these relationships and proportions, only a block of muscle remains, which is fine if all you're trying to do is convey the development of those muscles. The real challenge is to take those developed muscles to a level beyond mere mass. We are, after all, humans, not animals, and I think it's our responsibility to take the architectural potential of bodybuilding into the area of kinetic art, making it a form that flows, that lives, art that we have obviously had some control in shaping. Everyone has his own definition of symmetry, but if you scrutinize a drawing of a bodybuilder, you'll note that he's always depicted as very massive with a tiny waist, but perfectly balanced upper and lower body, always wide shoulders, big thighs, and a miniature waist. When I think of symmetry, the upper and lower body don't have to be balanced exactly, but the lines must flow. There have been bodybuilders with big upper bodies slightly out of balance with weaker lower bodies or vice versa, but the men were nevertheless all-time greats because what they had flowed. Of course, if it's all in balance, so much the better. At this point in my career, that is precisely my focus. With my bone structure, I don't feel I should carry as much mass as Phil Hill, for example, or Rich Gaspari. My weapon, on the other hand, is definition and symmetry. When training for symmetry, it's crucial to study yourself with a critical and objective eye if you really want to see areas that need to be filled out to give your physique perfect flowing lines. At the moment, for instance, I'm concentrating on my upper chest and medial deltoids, inner triceps, upper thighs for more sweep, the outer calf for a bold contour. In other words, I'm making sure that all my detail muscles are round and full into adjacent body parts, contributing an aesthetic rhythm to the whole. Now, let's say you're standing in front of the mirror and you have symmetry in mind. What are some of the things you first look for? As for me, I first want to be as big as possible. My constant goal is to keep my tiny waist, wide back, sweeping thighs, and big deltoids and arms, to which I want to add as much mass as possible without destroying the lines I already possess. Of course, the more size I add to my basic shape and balance, the more my symmetry becomes accentuated. By filling out the areas I'm concentrating on, everything will look 10 pounds heavier. Naturally, definition plays a key role. During the 3-year period when Frank Zane was unbeatable, he came to the stage super cut with perfect lines. He looked like a statue, and that's what you should be able to visualize when you stand in front of a mirror. If you're able to project what you eventually want to look like, you should have no problem spotting all the little areas that require attention. You may ask, what if I'm genetically cursed with a blocky body? Can I have symmetry? Of course you can, but you'll have to work for it differently. If you have wide hips or a thick waist, then you must focus more on your delts and lats to make your body look wider than it is. Otherwise, no matter how wide it actually is, it won't create the image of a symmetrical width. Concentrated training on major body parts such as chest or legs will also throw you off balance. I think that Bob Paris trains very cleverly just to maintain his lines. I've watched him, and he seems to do just enough for each area to keep the perfect lines. He doesn't appear to have a desire to become disproportionately massive. He does just so much to build the correct relationship of width, depth, and muscle separation in concert with his mass, molding it into nice lines. That's what I'm doing. After 12 years of training, the maturity of my muscles is beginning to show increasingly, and that too helps. If you're a beginner, you have to examine your physique to see what you have. Asking whether you have the desire to obtain the symmetrical shape I've been talking about. After all, to me, this makes the ideal bodybuilder, but to someone else, it might not be the case. He might not want symmetry. And if so, he'll have to go with his primary motivation. Someone once said to me, symmetry is in the eye of the beholder, which means that each person's opinion of symmetry could be radically different. Since it's in the eye of the beholder, the eye can be very deceptive because of what the mind wants to perceive. Hence, you must be rigorously objective and honest with yourself when you assess your physique. Too many bodybuilders see only what they want to see, avoiding the need to be their own worst enemy in terms of criticism. You must also solicit the help of other people. When you pose, you have someone photograph or videotape your entire presentation, and then study each pose to find the correct positions that your body requires so that everything has the line you want to convey. If you have a wide waist or hips, for example, you'll find it can be disguised by just the right twisting. Or if your thighs are not as big as you want, the way you stand and position them can compensate. Videotapes and photos help considerably because they allow you to see yourself in a way that you might miss when you look at yourself in the mirror every day. You should also get the opinions of others. However, make sure that you choose someone whose candor you trust and respect. Kent Keene has helped me quite a bit, as well as a friend in Germany, Bernard Benderbeck. Both are very candid. I remember going to Germany one time and Bernard threw some photographs on a table and said something like, "Look at Bob Paris's shoulders and your shoulders. You need more outside cap." Until then, I had not known this, and I immediately went to work on my medial head. You have to have an open mind to accept this kind of analysis. Your ego cannot get in the way of constructive criticism. Remember, you don't always notice these little things that may be evident to others. I have another friend who's a dancer, and I'm considering ballet lessons from her as well as seeking her counsel regarding some of my posing. While dancers might not be expertly qualified to pass judgment on mass or muscularity, they would certainly have valid appraisals of your lines and your balance from head to toe. You shouldn't leave any stone unturned if you're seeking perfection. I've always wanted to improve, and over the years that I've been in bodybuilding, I have continually managed to do so simply because I have a keen ability to listen carefully to advice. I always have my eyes and ears open to pick up something new about myself in an effort to perfect myself. That, of course, is the first principle of improvement, to realize that you can always be better, that you're never perfect. You must be ready to listen to anybody, even an amateur, someone just starting out. But what he says might have merit. So listen to him, to everyone, in fact. For many bodybuilders, the major roadblock to symmetry is the preoccupation with size. Their sole goal is to get big, which can easily kill symmetry. If you load up with too much mass, you begin to look blocky. Sure, there might exist a small waist on your physique, but the lines are gone. They don't flow along with the physique, and the body parts don't complement one another. Developing symmetry is a long, tedious process. You can't simply bomb your weak parts and expect everything suddenly to come into proportion within a couple months. Creating symmetry is actually a consistent refining process. You'll find that when you bring up one body part, another will then have to be rebalanced, and so on. As I say, I've been at this 12 years, and I'm constantly getting better, but I'm still not finished. Also remember that you can't change your structure. That symmetry means using whatever structure you have to build it to its optimum shape. For symmetry, the types of exercises you do become important. You should focus more on isolation exercises rather than power movements, because the goal now is to develop small, specific areas. For example, the outside deltoid. What are you going to do for it? I do standing laterals or one-arm cable laterals and seated dumbbell shoulder presses. For the upper chest, I would be lots of barbell benching, bringing the barbell to your neck very high. Also, incline dumbbell presses, flies, although I don't do them at the moment because I don't need more width. Instead, I'm doing heavy dumbbell presses. I'm also working my traps a lot more currently, doing dumbbell shrugs to work the top part of the traps near the back, near the neck, thereby creating lines that are more finished looking. This, again, is the result of listening to someone else's advice. A friend saw me guest pose and said, "In your rear double bicep pose, your upper traps need to come up to your neck just a little more, but not very much." Now, this came from an amateur, and I found it of great value. For upper thighs, I squat with a board beneath my heels. The bigger your upper thighs, the smaller your waist will look. Also, inner and outer leg extensions, standing calf raises, and donkey raises are necessary for symmetry. Both bicep heads must be worked, hence I recommend preacher curls, the easy curl bar, and hammer curls. I've been doing these lately to accentuate certain areas, and in 6 months, I've changed things around quite a bit. But remember, each bodybuilder must decide on his own what he needs. If you train one way all the time, you'll look that way, but if you keep refining your exercises, you'll keep refining your body. After training for a number of years, you will discover that if you change your workouts even a mere bit, you'll notice changes taking place in your physique very easily and quickly. Nutrition also plays a big part in symmetry. You can't look at symmetrical unless you keep the fat off your body. I never climb more than 10 to 12 pounds above contest weight. I eat enough to continue growing, and yet I stay within the range of becoming readily shredded. This approach allows me to see exactly what's happening in my body. If you get 20 or 30 pounds above contest weight, you can't see anything until a few weeks before the contest, and by then it's too late to do anything about it. There's also things outside the training arena that help symmetry. Custom-made posing trunks are a perfect way to accentuate your particular structure. To shorten excessively long legs or lengthen short ones or slim or enlarge outsized weak body parts. And you shouldn't target how your posing routine becomes crucial for projecting your symmetry. You must know how to twist or turn or stand just right if you wish to display your lines to their best advantage. Bob Paris is absolutely perfect with his posing. For every position, he knows exactly where each part of his body should be to achieve that perfect line. He's quite unlike other guys who flex here, flex there, who jump around unsure and lacking confidence of where they should be on any particular pose. Posing correctly takes lots of practice. With posing, you must first, through trial and error, determine which pose works and then go about practicing to make it natural. You must be able to visualize the pose and feel just where the line should be. It must become instinctive when you hit the pose. Bodybuilding is a competitive sport, but it's also an art form. And while muscle by itself is necessary, it's much more pleasing to watch when it's arranged symmetrically. That's how I'd like people to see me, as an artist, as someone who combines mass, definition, presentation, and living, moving lines. All right. Good article by Tony Pearson. And that, of course, again, was from the February 1989 issue of Flex Magazine. They got a great shot of Rich Gaspari on the cover. This was at those Grand Prix shows in 1988 where he took, right after the Olympia, where he took second to Haney for, was that the third year in a row? Third year in a row. Yeah, he got second in 86, 87, and 88. But he's got a great shot of him doing a hands-on hip, most muscular, really shredded and vascular. Great shot. All right, guys, that's all we got. So I hope you enjoyed this interview with Janet Tech. We will see you guys next week on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Take care out there. Be careful of that COVID. Stay healthy. Enjoy your workouts. And we'll see you guys next week. Take care.